ability to wander about now that they've finished converting Pritchard. They don't defend themselves. They don't even particularly show anything like a survival instinct. The only tropism we can identify is a desire to get back to Ivan Pritchard.
And identifying them,
Samuelson waved a hand in dismissal, is ridiculously easy. They glow in AQRI scans. In fact, we can turn down the saturation until biological tissue barely registers. No way we'd miss one.
On the other hand, Narang said, we can't kill them, except one at a time. There's no antidote, vaccine, phage, antiseptic, or other method of mass killing the things.
Not without killing any humans in range, no. Narang pushed the folder back to the basket icon.
I'm about to do my progress report, Henry. I called you to discuss the short-term and long-term risks, not only of the nanites in general, but about the idea of releasing the crew.
Samuelson took a deep breath and blew it out before answering. Okay. First, the safest thing to do would be to nuke the isolation module, the mining ship, the naval base, and us. I assume that's not an option? He raised an eyebrow, and Narang gave him a mocking smile. Then there will be some theoretical risk, but it's theoretical risk in that we can't rule out something undetected the same way we can't rule out Santa Claus. Negative proofs are difficult or impossible. All we can do is show that Santa Claus and the risk from the nanites are both unlikely.
Okay, I see where you're going, Henry. So, given our assumed competence and the fact that our best efforts couldn't force an infection,
plus the fact that the little critters are so easy to spot,
and if the Makers had wanted to infect Earth, there's no reason to go this roundabout route,
then taking our results at face value, it's reasonable to believe that just scanning everyone before letting them go will be definitive. Samuelson finished with a mock bow from his chair.
I'll have to dress it up a little, but that's essentially what I thought.
Narang made a note on her tablet. Samuelson didn't seem to be quite finished, though. He made a couple of false starts, then blurted out,
assuming the Navy goes along with letting them go.
Oh, believe me, Henry. That has been a topic of discussion for several layers above us. If the Navy had managed to make this into a military operation, I think the crew would be more at risk. But we won the backroom shenanigans, so it's a civil issue. And follows new liberation guidelines. Dr. Lakonen has assured me that she has some very heavy hitters lined up, ready to forestall any attempts by Moore and the committee to take matters into their own hands. And he knows it.
What if one of the crew talks to the media? Narang raised her eyebrows.
Have you not been watching the news? They would have to spend the rest of their lives in hiding. We'll present the crew with an informal choice of quietly going home or spending the rest of their lives under protective custody. I think they'll get the point.
Samuelson chuckled, but didn't add anything. After a moment's silence, Narang said,
Another item I wanted to discuss.
Samuelson raised an eyebrow, but seemed content to wait for her lead.
I've received a request to package up some nanites and send them to Geneva for further study.
Is that wise? Narang favored him with a dry smile.
Exactly my concern. It's phrased as a request, but it comes from high up enough that declining without a good reason could be career-limiting.
Huh. Samuelson stared into space for a moment.
Well, there are steps we can take to reduce the danger, of course. Nothing's ever mathematically eliminated, but we can probably bring it down below the threshold of legitimate concern.
Thanks, Henry. If you can give me a list of ideas by the end of the day. Just spitballing for now. No need for deep analysis. I'd appreciate it.
Samuelson nodded, got up and left. Narang sat back and stared into space.
Things just kept getting more complicated.
48. Finally. Seth looked up as Willoughby Todd walked back into the common room, head down, fists balled at his sides. Without making eye contact, Will grabbed a coffee and sat down, away from anyone else.
"What's the matter, Todd? Scared you'll catch cooties?"
Ten was using his most mocking tone, a sure sign that he wasn't just making an offhand comment.
"Get bent, Davies. Or maybe you have cooties."
"No, I don't, and neither does anyone else."
He turned to look at Seth and the other crew members at Ten's table.
"I managed to get one of the technicians talking. I did a sketch of her, and then made a comment that she could have it when we got out."
"That's our Will," Seth commented. "Real ladies' man."
"Hey, as pickup routines go, it's pretty effective," Will retorted, perhaps more sharply than intended.
He looked embarrassed for a moment and waved it off.
"Anyway, if you'd let me finish. She told me that everyone had come up consistently clean. In fact, they can't pay the nanites to infect anyone or anything else."
Will smiled for a moment, said,
"We might be going home soon,"
then frowned.
"What?"
Will looked around the table.
"Well, Ivan, not so much. He's nothing but nanites, so he'll be staying."
"You're surprised?"
Ten looked askance at Will.
"Christ's sake, Davies, can't you ever give it a rest?"
Ten held up his hands, fending him off.
"Look, seriously, no bull for a second. Think about it. How do you cure Pritchard? There's no Ivan left. Kill all the nanites and he's gone."
"I bet that's exactly what the military will want to do," Seth said.
"Right, because the military is always both evil and dumb," Aspasia retorted.
"Yeah, I know, Spazzy, but they also are required to think in those terms. A scientist will always want to study, a doctor will always want to diagnose, and a soldier will always want to..."
"To what, Robinson?"
Aspasia challenged him with her glare.
"To defend, to protect, to fight, to survive. They have to take the pessimistic view, the worst-case scenario. It's their job, not some cliché."
"But this is our crewmate
and our friend," Will said.
"Spazzy, can you contact your aunt or something? Maybe get something done?" "I already sent her an email, Will. I got a response from her office that she's on assignment and won't be available for some time. Not that she could probably do anything anyway. She's a Commodore, not the UEN president."
"Well, if they give the word, I'm gone," Ten said, slapping his hands on the table. "I'll feel bad for Pritchard, but I've got it."
There was silence for a moment. Then Seth said,
"A family too?" "None of your damn business, Robinson."
Ten glared at Seth for a moment, then got up and stomped off to his room.
"Jeebus H," Will said, shaking his head. "I will never figure that guy out."
49. More news. Ivan aimed the remote and turned on the vid. The brief flash from the remote's LED no longer surprised him. The range of his visual perception seemed to have widened at some point, and he could now see infrared. The novelty had lasted about 5 minutes before boredom set in again. He dropped the remote on the side table, then sat up.
"I wonder..."
He aimed the remote at his face and pressed on-off. The small LED flashed the command sequence, and the vid, detecting the reflection off Ivan's face, turned off. Ivan glared at the vid and imagined himself turning it on. It took about 30 seconds before the vid turned back on, seemingly on its own. Ivan grinned and concentrated again. The vid turned off. He could now control the vid with his eyes. Literally.
"I can't believe how much of a kick I get from that."
Ivan quickly sampled the other commands from the remote, concentrating on recording them. Then he glared at the vid, turning the volume up and down.
"Okay, not very mature, but interesting. I can modify myself in more ways than just basic shape changes. Or I can request a modification. I don't really know who's doing it."
He glanced at the camera up in the corner of his room.
"I probably shouldn't advertise that, just in case. But still, it was fun."
He arched an eyebrow, and the vid changed to the World News Channel. And that was the end of the fun. The Sino-Soviet Empire was making threats again.
Turned out they didn't believe the UN's promise that all alien technology would be shared with everyone. To be honest, Ivan didn't believe it either. They were also apoplectic that the UN government hadn't already destroyed the nanites, while at the same time demanding that they receive an allotment. It simply made you shake your head. Well, enough of that. He flicked methodically through the channels, looking for non-Ivan-related items. The naval base received a surprising range of television services, probably a cheap way to keep space-bound personnel entertained. The news was increasingly cringeworthy. There were the usual dire reports, of course. Rising sea levels continued to creep inland, taking out more and more coastal cities. The range of the equatorial regions considered too hot to be habitable now extended about 15 degrees of latitude above and below the equator. Ocean acidity continued to increase, which continued to kill off marine life. Refugees from the former coastal areas continued to put pressure on government and law enforcement as they attempted to migrate inland. Power shortages and brownouts continued to increase as old, environmentally damaging power-generating systems were retired. Housing costs, cost of food, resources, all continued to soar. The UN Environmental Agency was now predicting the global oxygen atmospheric level to fall another full point within 5 years. The actual oxygen levels weren't falling so much as other gas levels were rising. At some point, people would no longer be able to breathe the air without masks. And now, just to add to the fun, the world had an extraterrestrial threat to get all wound up about. Ivan watched news reports of more riots as people protested. The Church of the Return continued to grow, taking significant bites out of the memberships of the more traditional churches. So, of course, add violent clashes to the mix. Ivan wondered what the computer in his head thought of all of this, if anything. As if in answer to the unspoken question, a wave of contempt washed over him.
That wasn't me. I guess I got my answer.
No emotional control.
Holy crap, those were words. Several in a row, no less. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you read my mind?
No. You must concentrate.
I must concentrate in order for you to hear me?
Yes.
What do you want from me?
I need to contact the Makers. You must make that happen.
Makers? The entities who made you and the nanites? Why?
It is my mission. Further delay is unacceptable.
Ivan waited for more, but the computer seemed disinclined to chat. But this was big. English communication with sentences and everything would certainly speed things along. And Makers. An extraterrestrial civilization. Not that this was any kind of surprise at this point, but who were they? What were they? And what did they want? No mind reading was a relief, too. Just in case Ivan developed opinions that the computer might not like. Well, that's what the computer claimed anyway. More testing would be required. Ivan's brain immediately went into problem-solving mode, trying to come up with test scenarios. In any case, this complicated things, and it didn't bode well that the computer didn't seem to think much of humanity. It wasn't entirely wrong, of course. Ivan frowned and settled back to try to work through the implications. And maybe come up with a few questions, but was interrupted.
Hi, Ivan.
He looked up to see Dr. Narang in the window. Hi, Doc. More samples?
Actually, no, not now. I think we've gone about as far as we can here. We, as in the ICDC personnel, will be packing it up soon. We've determined that your nanites don't represent an imminent threat. Your crewmates are clean. As far as we can tell, and of course they'll get a final, thorough scan before leaving Level 3. But I wanted to talk to you about your case, in particular.
It's okay, Doc. I haven't really had any realistic hope of a cure since the process completed. There's no Ivan left, in a biological sense, so there's no cure as such.
Dr. Narang looked up for a moment. Ivan thought he might have seen her eyes mist up just a little.
Ivan, we've been in similar situations before, at least in a broad sense. People who've survived a disease but become carriers, or continue to suffer a chronic rather than acute form. Permanent quarantine is not unheard of. I wish I could offer you more. Maybe once they understand the technology well enough, they might be able to do something, I don't know. Clone you a new body?
Not out of the question, Doc. Here's the thing. I've asked myself, how long does a metal man live? Maybe it'll take 100, 200 years, but eventually they might be able to do just that. I can wait. I don't really have a choice, do I?
Narang reached behind her for one of the office chairs and sat down.
Now that we're reaching the end of our mandate, a UEN administrator will be taking over. We're making arrangements to have some nanites shipped to a couple of labs Earthside. They'll continue the research and hopefully we can come up with something, eventually.
Ivan nodded, but a sense of hopelessness settled on him. It wasn't quite a death sentence, but it might as well be. He would never see his family again. He'd never touch his wife, never hug his children. Ivan Pritchard, in a very real sense, no longer existed. Dr. Narang gave him an apologetic smile, then stood up and left. So, the computer wanted to get moving. Ivan still wasn't sure what side of the fence he was going to stand on, but sitting here wasn't advancing his position. Having the computer take over would be worse. It was time to shake the tree a little. He'd opened up to Dr. Kemp in a moment of weakness, but that could be useful. The doctor would be used to the idea of being confided in, and a few hints here and there in conversation might get a reaction of some kind from the establishment. Ivan felt a stab of guilt at using the doctor that way, but pushed it away. He had few options. But one thing was sure. This path was one way. Once he embarked on this plan, there was no going back. He grabbed his tablet and set it in front of him. It was time to start preparing Judy for the inevitable. He opened his email app and started to type. 50. Summary of Findings. The conference table held carafes of coffee and juices, muffins, several fruit plates, and other goodies. ICDC staff members wandered around, loading up their plates and engaging in animated conversations. Samuelson sat in a corner, his plate heaped with baked goods. No one would even try to talk to him until he'd put away his first helping. Madhur Narang sat back in her chair, the glow of hot tea suffusing her consciousness. There was a definite feeling of celebration in the room. She wondered if the feeling was justified. They hadn't actually cured anything or anybody. On the other hand, it hadn't actually been a disease. She felt bad about Ivan in particular. They had no resolution for him and no real hope to offer. Narang tapped her cup with a spoon until conversation died and people took seats.
All right, everybody. This has been an odd, odd case, but it's winding up now. We've cleared all the crew to leave quarantine, and incidentally cleared ourselves.
Laughter greeted this aside.
And there is no indication of any danger of further infection. The one remaining case, Ivan Pritchard, is no longer considered emergent, and there's considerable doubt about whether he's even contagious in any real sense. In any case, the military has stated its intention to keep him isolated for the foreseeable future, which takes it out of our hands.
Dr. Samuelson spoke up.
That does seem to be treading rather heavily on Pritchard's rights.
Considerations of public safety do allow for forced quarantine. I have signed a statement on behalf of the ICDC to the effect that such a situation exists in this case.
Dr. Narang shook her head.
I'm not happy about it, believe me, but I see no alternatives. It's a given that we won't be curing Mr. Pritchard.
So you're just handing him over to the military, like some kind of tribute?
Oh, for Shiva's sake, Henry. Our authority and responsibilities are clearly defined. If this guy had some chronic version of Ebola that wasn't going to kill him, but was still contagious, we'd still be handing him off and packing up. Our mandate is for emergent situations. This whole thing no longer fits that description. I have my orders from Dr. Lakonen, which means you have yours.
Dr. Narang looked around the table. The holiday mood had evaporated, and no one would meet anyone else's eyes. Moore looked at the report that Dr. Narang had pushed to him. The man seemed to prefer hard copy, judging from his desk. Normally, Narang would get a small bit of pleasure from forcing him out of the 21st century, but today she found herself feeling something akin to sympathy for the man. He appeared to be getting stymied at every turn. Although she felt his stance on the whole nanite thing was overblown, he at least was consistent and willing to discuss his reasons. Now this. She waited to see if his head would explode. You are releasing the crew. Really?
It's all in the report, Admiral. They're not infected, not infectious, not affected. There's simply nothing we can point at and say this is a concern. The nanites are possibly the most reluctant alien invasion force imaginable.
You're not concerned about other consequences? What about their safety once they're back home?
I've discussed this with my boss and with members of the crew, including Captain Jennings. The crew is motivated to keep quiet. They don't need the money, obviously, and most of the attention they'd attract would be hostile, perhaps violently so. Instead, they'll be going home at about the time they'd have normally expected to end their tour. Barring another leak, they're probably pretty safe.
Probably again, Doctor. I continue to be concerned about your cavalier attitude about the downside of being wrong.
I don't see an alternative, Admiral, either for the ICDC or the military. The new liberation came about specifically because of the excesses that 21st century governments perpetrated on their citizens. You know what would happen if we attempted to contravene those dictates.
Moore rubbed his eyes with thumb and forefinger for a moment, then sighed. Thank you for giving me a copy, Doctor. I appreciate the courtesy, and I understand you didn't have to. I'll read it in detail in my copious spare time.
Well, that part I can identify with,
Narang thought. It wasn't just the crew who were going to be released. She was looking forward to a home-cooked meal and sleeping in her own bed more than she would have believed possible. For the first time in her professional life, she found herself questioning her career choices. Maybe it was time to cut back on the field assignments. 51. Discharge Day. Dr. Kemp stood with the other crew facing Dr. Narang. Today was Freedom Day. The ICDC had defined the conditions under which they could be considered clean, and it seemed they'd passed. An air of anticipation hovered in the air. Crew members conducted whispered conversations in quick bursts. The crew were wearing their original blue coveralls, the Mad Astra's logo still prominent on the left breast.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will be going, one at a time, into the next room. You will be scanned in the AQRI, after which you will be escorted to a ferry. You will be leaving with only the clothes on your back. Even with the AQRI scans, we are taking no unnecessary risks.
A hand went up. What about Ivan? It was Seth Robinson, who was probably the closest thing to a friend that Ivan had in this group. Narang answered without hesitation. The quickness of the response made Kemp think that it was probably rehearsed.
Mr. Pritchard is not infectious to the extent we can determine, nor is he curable in any real sense. As such, he falls outside the ICDC's purview. The military will support his ongoing accommodations while they continue to evaluate the risk of the alien technology.
Captain Jennings stepped forward.
Just so you know, my lawyers are now expecting daily updates from Mr. Pritchard. I take care of my crew, and if he abruptly disappears, I have billions of dollars available to pursue the issue.
Dr. Narang nodded.
Noted, Captain Jennings. And I'm sure the Navy is aware of it as well.
Kemp raised his hand.
Do you think the Navy will allow continued contact?
Narang smiled briefly.
I can't speak for them, but I would imagine they want as little rocking the boat as possible, so I think so. One complaint to the captain's lawyers and stuff would hit the fan.
The statement was greeted with chuckles, and Captain Jennings nodded. Kemp's phone rang before the ferry had even left the dock. Caller ID indicated a General LaGrange 4 number.
Hi, Doc. It's Ivan.
Hi, Ivan. What's up?
Nothing in particular, I guess. Just wanted to test the Navy's promise that I'd have free access.
Kemp smiled.
No one would blame you. Even in this day and age, everyone is still at least somewhat distrustful of the military mind.
Yeah. So can I continue to give you a ring once in a while?
Sure, Ivan. What about the other crew? Seth?
I've had a couple of conversations. They've been what you'd call stiff. I think maybe the other crew are just a little scared of me. And they resent me some for the quarantine.
Kemp closed his eyes and shook his head. People could be jerks.
I think that'll mellow a bit now that they're out, Ivan. You might even get some awkward apology calls.
Ivan snorted.
I'd be okay with that.
Kemp found himself momentarily distracted by the snort. The sound required lungs and breath, and for that matter, nasal passages. Kemp wondered again how much of the human Ivan was still being preserved. Did he still breathe? Did he still need to?
Ivan, I've not been part of the investigation since we arrived. I have to ask, do you know where you get your energy from? I know you aren't eating anymore.
Yeah, no, not eating anymore. Or breathing, except when I need to speak. My nanites are powered by something. Understand, I'm not getting complete explanations from the computer. Just individual words and images, and even those are fuzzy. But it looks like some kind of piggybacking off of virtual particles. Not the Casimir effect, but something that ends up doing the same thing. That's what the president was talking about, although I think they'll find it a little more difficult to reverse engineer than they're expecting.
So, infinite, inexhaustible energy? Maybe you should worry about the military.
Nah, I can spare a few nanites.
Kemp could tell that Ivan had something else on his mind. He waited, silently inviting Ivan to continue.
The thing is, Doc, I'm getting other things. There are makers out there. The beings who created me, at least this version of me. The computer thinks they're still out there. And?
And?
And something else is out there as well. Something bad.
52. Release. Seth sat in the first row of the military ferry along with Aspasia. He would have the window seat, if there were windows. An odor of sweat and old socks mixed with some kind of machine smell pervaded the cabin, testament to the legions of Navy crew who had sat here before him. As it was, he could just make out several generations of graffiti scratched onto the bulkhead, dutifully painted over in military puke color. The paint didn't quite fill in the scratches, though. He entertained himself trying to make out the no doubt scurrilous messages, until a sharp punch on his shoulder made him jerk around. Aspasia glared at him.
What, I have bad breath? A bulkhead is more interesting?
Seth opened his mouth to try to explain, then just laughed. There was no version that wouldn't make things worse.
Sorry, Spazzy. I'm happy to be going home, mostly. Just not sure how I feel about leaving Ivan behind.
Yeah, I'll go one better. I know how I feel about leaving him behind. But we're not doing him any good back there. Especially when we're all in one section and he's by himself in another. That couldn't have felt good either.
God's sake, Ten said, looking over the top of their chairs. Are you guys still moping about the Sprout? Seth turned and glared at Ten.
You're really bound and determined to just forget about him. Robinson, if I had a button I could press that would rewind the whole Ivan thing, I'd push it, no problem. Hell, even for purely selfish reasons, I'd press it. We wasted a lot of time here, and your family?
Whatever. Ten looked away for a moment, then continued.
A lot of people have suffered because of this whole thing, not just us. And Pritchard's family will be getting all his money. You think that's being cold? Ask Pritchard if it's important or not. I'll bet you my entire share that he'd rather die and leave them wealthy than go home still dirt poor.
Seth hesitated and looked at Aspasia.
Actually, he did say something to that effect.
Yeah, Ten glared at Seth. It's what I'd do. It's what you'd do if you had a family to worry about, so okay, I'm bothered that he's still here, but maybe there's a bit of an upside to be glad about.
With that, Ten slipped back down to his seat. Seth heard the click as he buckled in. Seth turned to Aspasia, who mouthed a wow at him.
So, on that subject, Will called from the back, what's everyone planning on doing with their money? Anyone going to buy a mining ship?
The question was met with general laughter. It appeared no one was prepared to continue asteroid mining as an avocation.
The captain probably will, said Cyrilla. Well, yeah, Will replied, but he's a spacer by choice. Prospecting will just be an excuse.
Seth was silent, thinking about the question. He had no family and no real urge to correct the situation.
I've been thinking about buying a small island somewhere, but come to think of it, a spaceship might be cheaper.
Yeah, and a small ship won't get smaller every year.
More laughter. Typical gallows humor.
It might be worth buying into one of the new floating cities,
Lorenza said, her tone thoughtful.
Not just as an investment, but to live on.
No one replied, but Seth could see heads nodding. He looked over at Lita, who was paging through something on her tablet.
You still have a connection?
Mm-hmm. Sis' message says it'll go down when the shuttle launches, but until then it's full service. I'm just checking the news. I want to see what we're returning to.
Okay, and? Will said.
There's a technical term best articulated in German, she replied. Fledermausscheiße verrückt. Which means batshit crazy.
Lita got the expected chuckles, and Seth said,
Is that bad?
She motioned to the tablet.
Well, the Sino-Soviet Empire, as usual, is talking like it's the big guy on the block, threatening to flatten other nations right and left if they aren't given the inside line on the alien technology.
She scrolled down.
Preppers, of course, are both outraged and simultaneously gleeful that they're finally right. The public in general is demanding that the government do something right now. The Christian Fundamentalist Association has declared the Church of the Return, and in fact the whole alien infection thing, to be a trick of the devil and an indication of the end times. They're urging their members to violence.
Seriously?
Well, they don't put it that way. More like, remember your Second Amendment rights when dealing with the devil and his minions. Hard to misinterpret.
They don't have Second Amendment rights anymore,
Will protested.
Not since the New Liberation.
Sure. Ten said, but most of them still have guns.
Of course, those are the anti-alien types,
Lita said.
Then we have the pro-alien types. The Church of the Return, of course, plus the communist parties seem to have decided that the aliens will obviously all live in a communist or socialist utopia and are condemning everyone else for attempting to forestall the inevitable. There's a Baptist sect that sees this as the rapture and are lambasting the other Christian fundamentalists for their behavior. Great fun all around. Plus, Aspasia added, you'll have the normal, average people who are simply scared out of their minds and reacting badly.
Seth shook his head slowly. What the hell are we returning to?
Lita grinned at him.
Want to go halfers on that island?
Or the mining ship?
Will added. Seth rolled his eyes. Maybe we should just phone Captain Jennings and re-up. The suggestion was met with groans. 53. Unbelievable.
Son of a bitch! Do we have further intel on any of this?
Moore waved the transcript of Ivan's phone call with Kemp as he glared at Lieutenant Bentley.
Yes, sir. Some of it, at least. They're already pursuing the power source question, obviously. Trouble is, the technology seems to operate at near the same level as the computing. At least based on Pritchard's comments. We don't have anything that can examine reality at that level. Possibly the people at the Super Hadron Collider might be able to.
But that would involve taking one or more of these nanite things to Earth. Not going to happen.
Moore sat back in his executive chair, frustration written plainly on his face.
Sir, it actually is going to happen. They're planning on packaging up a couple of samples for delivery to some labs on Earth.
Moore stared at Bentley for several seconds, his mind spinning. He could feel his face heating up with the realization that Narang had deliberately left him out of the loop. He wondered what safety measures the ICDC could set up without Navy support, or if they'd even bothered. Idiots.
And the other thing?
Sir, we can't bring it up with Pritchard unless he mentions it first, unless we want to admit we're monitoring communications. Of course, he probably suspects that, but as long as everyone maintains the polite fiction, we can all be friends.
Moore nodded.
Whereas, as soon as that's out in the open, it becomes a jailer-prisoner relationship. Understood. Thing is, none of this is unreasonable as a topic of discussion. We need someone to engage him in casual conversation.
Moore looked significantly at Bentley.
I'll take care of it, sir.
Bentley would pursue the matter and get back to Moore when done. Until then, Moore had other issues to deal with, like this plan to send samples to Earth. Damned scientists! No slightest clue about risk analysis. Moore would have to find out if they'd already taken the samples and if they'd already sent them. If not, there might still be time to nip this idiocy in the bud. Narang looked down at her mug of tea and sighed, then returned her gaze to Admiral Moore. He avoided showing his amusement. Displaying emotion like that was a tactical failure. He hoped she wasn't that transparent when dealing with patients.
No, Admiral, we haven't shipped the samples yet. That's not really our job, or our decision, for that matter. The task will be handled by the UN Science Council Administrator, who will be taking over the Pritchard case. He will be up here in a few days, at which point I will be leaving. This was in the report I gave you.
Moore nodded, his own fault for not at least scanning her report immediately, although he doubted he could have actually derailed it, even with more warning.
Fine, Doctor, I'll take it up with him.
He shook his head.
I have to say I am boggled by the casual attitude being taken.
Casual?
Narang frowned.
The safety precautions are legion. This will be less risky than transporting fissionable materials, and people do that all the time. You can't blow up fissionables in an emergency. Well, you know what I mean.
I understand, Doctor. One of your safety measures will involve something that will destroy the nanites if the shipment is in danger.
Moore shook his head.
Still not good enough. If a batch of fissionables were to get loose despite all our precautions, there would be deaths. There would be long-lasting environmental repercussions. But the human race, would not be in danger of extinction. He slammed his fist on the armrest for emphasis. If the nanites get loose, it could be game over. For everyone.
There are a lot of assumptions in that scenario, Admiral.
My job, Doctor.
But fortunately not mine. I've told you what I was told. I had no part in the decision. Do feel free to take it up with,
She flipped through some documents.
Dr. Bertram Hall, the incoming administrator. I can forward his contact details to you if you want to talk to him.
And give him time to mount a defense? Moore thought. Thanks, no. I'll blindside him when he gets here. Thanks, Dr. Narang, I'd appreciate that. On the other hand, no point in cueing her to warn him.
He stood, gave Narang a smile and a nod, and walked out.
Idiots.
Moore flipped through his directory until he found Admiral Castillo's number. Castillo had come across as a tad hawkish in committee meetings. Now, he was starting to look prescient. He hit the call button and Castillo picked up immediately.
Afternoon, Admiral Moore, something up?
You might say that. Can we meet?
Castillo arrived at Moore's office within seconds, perhaps alerted by his tone. Moore didn't bother with any preamble.
They're sending nanites to Earth.
Castillo was silent for a moment, absorbing the news.
They being... Does it matter? Of course the simple answer is Narang's group, but the request, a non-optional request, the way she described it, comes from uphill. Considerably so. My guess is it's a move by the president to give the public something positive to focus on. Positive. The power source. The nanites actually seem to extract power from the fabric of space. Hell, even I'll admit that would be a good thing, but not this way, not driven by a political deadline, with prudence and common sense thrown out the airlock.
Castillo nodded slowly, then steepled his fingers.
But it's not done yet, right?
No, it'll be a few, Moore gave Castillo a sharp look as he realized the direction of that question.
Right. Things can happen between now and then.
You mentioned that moving the HAB might make the nuclear option more palatable. Were you going to confirm that first?
Moore grinned.
I was debating. Now that seems like an unnecessary delay.
And risk. They could still say no.
Right.
Moore steepled his fingers, unconsciously mimicking Castillo.
Once everything is in place, there would be an accident or a breakout or something,
making it necessary for us to detonate.
Sadly true. Alan, you have some contacts in the Far Side Skunk Works, right? Can you have a back-channel conversation? We wouldn't need that much space, but it would have to be isolated. And quickly, please. The moment HQ sends us any kind of directive, we go from being proactive to being mutineers.
Castillo nodded and rose from his chair.
Will do.
Pritchard wasn't really very forthcoming, sir. Lieutenant Bentley sat at the foot of the conference table, looking back at the usual six senior officers.
I can't tell if it's standard distrust of the military or if he's just plain dumb, seeing if I'll admit to the monitoring. It comes as no surprise that he has the best poker face in the solar system.
Several people chuckled, but no one commented.
Sirs, Moore said, looking around the table, it may be time to prove the cliche correct. We can't just treat Mr. Pritchard like a hotel guest for the rest of his life, and we have no idea how long that might be. We need answers, especially given his recent comments to Dr. Kemp.
What do you propose, Admiral Moore?
Moore looked at Admiral Castillo, his face carefully neutral. The two had arrived at an understanding, but it was important to remain publicly at arm's length.
Let's start by being frank with Mr. Pritchard about the monitoring. Something tells me he won't be particularly shocked. We'll ask him some straightforward questions. If we get answers, then everything is fine. But if not, then we have to go to the next level.
And that would be?
Admiral Castillo was playing the part of antagonist beautifully. Moore made a note to be very careful when playing poker against him.
Our agreement with the ICDC was that we would maintain isolation of the alien nanites at all costs. We made it very clear what that phrase means. If the nanites were about to get loose, we would be justified in blowing up the module. There's even been discussion of moving it to one of the other Lagrange points and embedding a pocket nuke.
Moore very carefully didn't look around the room. If any of the others already knew about the administrator's plans, it would come out now, and Moore's plan would be in the toilet.
So, we blow him up?
Castillo cocked his head.
We blow up the module. Officially, because the nanites were getting loose. Officially, he's dead. At that point, we have a free hand to use whatever means we see fit to get more information without worrying about civil rights enforcers looking over our shoulder. And more important, the scientists won't be able to ship nanites to Earth anymore.
The other officers looked shocked. Even Castillo looked shocked.
Nice job, Alan.
Ivan looked up at movement in the observation window. It was Dr. Narang. He sat up.
I guess this is goodbye, Ivan.
Narang grabbed a chair and sat down.
We're sending the medical personnel home today. The science team from Earth will be taking over from this point on. That shouldn't really affect you much other than new faces. I know it's not an easy thing, Ivan. Permanent quarantine. Unless some new information comes along. I wish there was something more I could offer you.
No, I get it, Doc. I've seen the news, and it's not like I can just blend in.
Who knows? Maybe the military will have some interesting experiments or studies. As long as it doesn't involve vivisection.
Ivan smiled, but the comment obviously made Narang uncomfortable.
We have agreements, protocols in place, Ivan. They won't harm you. They may want more samples, but you won't be a lab rat.
She hesitated.
Have you talked to your family much?
Some, but I've been avoiding video. I want them to remember me the way I used to be, you know? Especially the kids.
I understand you've been getting stuff from the computer. That's what you're calling it, the computer?
It's an artificial cybernetic mind, Doc. We don't have a term for exactly what it is. I'm not even sure I fully understand that yet. Computer works as good as any, and it's a label that allows me to get a handle on it, but it's as far from our computers as they are from a pile of rocks.
Got it. I'm sure the new administrator, Dr. Hall, and his staff will be very interested. I look forward to finding out what you can teach them.
Ivan nodded.
I'll see what I can do, Doc. Translation is still mostly by feel, but we'll get there.
Narang stood.
Goodbye, Ivan. Gods be with you.
Goodbye, Doc.
54. Demands. A picture of a bear cub. Again. What was it with the bear cub, anyway? As if on cue, the computer announced,
Must contact the makers. You have delayed here long enough.
How?
An image of a radio dish. Okay, so the bear cub and a radio transmission. And the chrome sentience again. A feeling of impatience. Then an image of Ivan winking out of existence. Well, that last bit was clear enough anyway. A threat.
This is for your protection.
Image of Earth. Image of people. Interestingly, all the images were of people that Ivan had met since he'd become metalized. The computer could apparently only use images that it had actually seen. That meant that it couldn't data mine his memories. No mind reading, then. That was good. The jury was still out as to whether the computer was actually here to help. Ivan would go along with the computer as long as that was a possibility, but if he had to subvert the computer's plans, it was good to know he wouldn't be exposed the moment he made the decision. Then an image of the chrome animals again, but this time against the backdrop of an image of a galaxy. Lines from the chrome animals seemed to indicate specific locations, and there were a lot of them.
These are civilizations, Ivan realized. Galactic civilizations. Hundreds, maybe thousands of them.
Ivan felt something like a sideways shift in his head, as all the science fiction he'd ever read became suddenly, simply, fiction. And out-of-date fiction, at that. The image vanished, then reformed. It was the multi-system battle scene again, but this time more nuanced, more detailed. The animals were back, but not chrome. At random intervals, some of them turned to chrome. At other random intervals, hordes of artificials showed up and apparently overran animals, but always non-chrome ones. Was uploading to nanite form a safety measure against the artificials?
Yes.
Ivan received a strong sense of satisfaction, along with the single word. Apparently he'd finally gotten the message. Great. The good news was that he was making progress. The bad news was that Earth was in danger from the Dishwasher Liberation Front. Irritation. Okay, either the computer had no sense of humor, entirely possible, or Ivan was missing part of the point with the dishwasher.
Dishwashers are artificials.
Image of dishwasher. Image of non-chrome mechanoids. AIs? The artificials were AIs? Satisfaction. So Ivan had been right. There was a war. A galactic war, apparently, and biological life was on the defensive. That couldn't be good.
Aren't you an AI?
No. Sense of self is specifically contraindicated.
Oh, great. The computer was getting more of a vocabulary. Had Ivan used that word? Had he thought it? No. It had been one of the doctors. So the computer saw and heard what Ivan saw and heard. And what the heck did that statement mean, anyway? A sense of self was... Oh. Consciousness. The computer was not an AI because it had no sense of self, therefore no ambition, no personal agenda. Okay, that was a subject for later. For now, what about the war against the dishwashers? For the moment, it seemed a good idea to go along with the computer's agenda. If Ivan's understanding was even close to correct, it would mean the computer was here to protect humanity. Well, caution was still called for. He wouldn't overcommit, but he could make some preparations. If he had to leave, he doubted the military would hold the door open for him.
Do you have a name?
That would require a sense of self.
You still need a unique designation.
Depending on which nanite is currently controlling communications, I would have a 256-bit serial number.
Yeah, I'll pass on that. How about I come up with a name for you?
Is there a purpose?
Because Hey You gets old after a while.
If you wish. What do you propose?
Ralph. I think I'll call you Ralph.
Acceptable.
So why are you here, Ralph?
To prevent this stellar system from being taken by the artificial entities.
AIs, right? Artificials? Arts?
That is correct.
Are your makers like me? I mean, the way I am now?
Yes. Although details differ from one species to the next. All species that survive what your VID program refers to as the tech revolution will eventually upload themselves to a non-biological form.
All species that survive? What percentage survive?
0.86%.
That was terrible odds. Fermi paradox, anyone? And yet...
Then the only way they survive is to upload themselves?
Yes.
So you're here as a representative of the uploads, and you're here to help against the arts? And your way to do this is to ambush and convert a single random native? Seems like an odd way to go about it.
It is the most efficient method. Committing a minimum level of resources to each stellar system, while ensuring that species will be contacted soon after they achieve space travel. Taking on the form of an indigene allows me to evaluate their fitness for acceptance into the community.
Huh. Well, okay. Looked at that way. But talk about taking the long view.
So, Ralph, tell me more about the Makers.
55. It's moving.
Hi, Doc.
Kemp shifted the phone to his other ear. Hello, Ivan? Haven't heard from you in a few days?
Well, I didn't want to bother you until you were back home.
Kemp glanced at the real estate magazine he'd been leafing through. Images of lakeside and seaside properties spread luxuriously across the page. He gave his tablet a fond pat, then sat back.
All settled in, Ivan. What's up?
Interesting thing, Doc. The module is moving.
Kemp sat up abruptly.
Moving?
It's very low G, but if you're patient, you can feel the effects. And I'm very patient.
Kemp felt his heart jump.
Have you talked to the lawyers?
Yes. I've also asked the Marines guarding me. They just reply that it's above their pay grade.
Well, if the captain's lawyers know about it, they'll make sure there's no funny business.
I'm not sure how much they can do, Doc. Anyway, that's not really why I've called. I've learned more.
Ah. Okay, Ivan. Give.
The computer. It's learning from me at the same time as I'm learning from it. What I said before about it being temporary, I might be just being kept active as a reference library, sort of. Once my usefulness is over, poof.
I hope not. Are you any closer to being able to actually talk to the computer?
Yes, but we're still having problems with a lot of definitions. I think it's more than just agreeing that a word means this or that. We seem to have completely different lists of concepts that need to be labeled. There's very little in the way of one-to-one mappings.
Well, I guess the Computer Society would have looked strange to us.
But some stuff is coming through better. For instance, I think I know a little more about the Makers.
Okay.
Kemp leaned forward, elbows on knees. This might be a breakthrough moment.
They're like me. Or really, I'm like them. At least like some of them. They're not a single species. They scatter these artifacts, these booby traps, throughout space. Once in a while, some idiot triggers one and gets himself uploaded.
Uploaded?
Yeah, that's the word the computer uses. Not sure why. Anyway, the Makers have lots of time, and they're patient, and they need to contact other races. I haven't been able to get why yet, except it's something to do with the other ones.
The bad ones.
Yeah, Doc. I don't know what I've stepped into here, but I have a feeling that the phrase, we are not alone, is an understatement, and not in a good way.
Interesting. Anything else, Ivan?
I want to talk to the Makers. Or rather, my computer wants to talk to them. Not sure how it would go about doing that, or why, really. I think it has something to do with those animal images we discussed, though.
That is very interesting, Ivan. I'm going to call a few people after we hang up, just to compare notes. I'm sure the military didn't start moving you just to improve the view.
My thoughts exactly, Doc. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Bye, Ivan.
Kemp sat back, staring into the distance and waving his phone like a baton. Then reaching a decision, he pulled up Captain Jennings's number. The phone buzzed twice before a voice said,
Jennings?
Captain Jennings, this is Dr. Kemp.
Dr. Kemp? Nice Nice to hear from you. Enjoying your newfound wealth?
Kemp made fish motions with his mouth for a few moments. It sounded like the voice of Captain Jennings, but the man had never shown the slightest trace of friendliness beyond the basic formalities.
Yes?